Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Millennial Love, a podcast from The Independent on everything to do with love, sexuality, identity and more. This week, I am very excited to be joined by author and journalist Bolu Babalola, whose new book, Love in Colour, is a selection of ancient love myths that she has rewritten to make them contemporary and diverse. There's a real feminist thread running through all of the stories, which focus on women who don't have to rely on men to save them, as is the traditional narrative in romantic folklore. It's a response to Bolu's growing up and seeing a lack of black love stories and black characters in the rom-coms and love stories in the mainstream. Enjoy the show. Hello.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm doing okay.
How have you been finding lockdown? I mean, we're not really in lockdown so much anymore, but, you know, how have you been finding general lockdown?
It's funny because, you know, I'm a writer and I've been in book mode for the past few months, even before lockdown. So I've been doing lockdown. So I went to LA for like a few weeks for my birthday and work in February. Came back in first week of March. Then it was lockdown, but I was editing my book anyway, so I would have been in lockdown anyway. So I guess it's affected me in the fact that I haven't had the option to go out and meet my friends, but ultimately it didn't really affect my life that much, you know, apart from the whole weirdness of a global pandemic, of course.
Yeah, I know the feeling. I'm also writing at the moment, so it's kind of a gift in a way, because it's like, well, I would have to be isolating anyway, so
exactly.
It's quite handy. I want to ask, you call yourself a rom commissaire, is that how I say that properly? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I guess.
Tell me about that. What do you mean by that?
I love rom-coms, and I can select a rom-com that's for your needs. Whatever you want, whatever you're in the mood for, I've probably got one ready for you in your mind. Don't test me on that, because that's a lot of pressure. But generally, that's what it is. And I think, I can break them down. I can break down the genre of rom-coms. I know the exact kind of rom-com protagonists, the tropes, everything. Is really just like my area of expertise. I probably shouldn't really say that, because that is a lot of pressure, but as far as things I'm good at, I think that's the thing that I'm, you know, good at the most.
Interesting. I love rom-coms. I think the term itself actually can sometimes sound a bit derogatory, can't it? Like, it sounds like the term, it's like it's kind of been misused a bit. What are some of your favorite rom-coms, and why are they your favorites?
When Harry Met Sally, Brown Sugar, because I love Brown Sugar and When Harry Met Sally, because they're very similar kind of films, and they're friendship-based rom-coms. I love My Best Friend's Wedding, even though it's kind of like an anti-rom-com, because Jules is like such a anti-hero, like she's a mess, but I love her. And the thing is, they are in love, they're so scared to approach it, and they're scared to confront themselves about them, especially Michael. But I love that. I love that movie. Oh god, there's so many. I don't even know where to start. I love TV rom-coms as well, especially in recent years, because rom-coms on the big screen have kind of taken a dip. So I've, you know, looked for them in things that I couldn't see on television. So New Girl, Lovesick, Catastrophe, Insecure, shows like that.
Catastrophe, I'm such a fan of. I love the ones that are like, right, they're just messy and realistic, and they exactly just show all of the, you know, messiness of real relationships. Like, I think, exactly. I mean, I love When Harry Met Sally as well, but the thing that annoys me about that film is that it's such a predictable ending, but I still love the film. But I kind of, the rom-coms I find myself more drawn towards are the ones where it's not the happy ending, and they don't end up together, and there's a reason for that, and it's very clear, I think, that's, but that can still be romantic, I think, sometimes.
Still be romantic. And I don't even mind the predictability of rom-coms that have happy ending, because for me, rom-coms are formulaic, and that's fine. I think people say that as a derogatory thing or something that's a negative about it, but I don't think that's bad at all. The thing is, it just triggers you to be more creative with it, and it's all about the journey and the obstacles. And most times, obstacles are internal. It's about fear. It's about fear of being exposed. It's about fear of being honest with ourselves. And I just love a good happy ending. That's why in my book, most of the stories have happy endings, if not ended endings in which you can infer a happy ending. So
yes, so I want to ask you about the book. So Love in Colour, so it's such a necessary and important book, kind of reimagining folklore, I suppose, and myths about romance. So can you tell the listeners a bit about what inspired you to write this book and basically explain what it's about for those who might not know?
So what inspired me to write this book? I think, you know, we're used to seeing stories like Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty and Snow White, and we assume that fairy tales come in this form, this Disney-fied form, and it's for white people, and it's for women who are white and skinny and fulfill this kind of societal idea of beauty. And also in these stories, the women are kind of waiting for a man to save them. And I just realized that maybe the reason why, part of seeing Black people and people of color humanized, is also seeing them have access to love on the mainstream, since love is really what binds us as humanity. And I feel like locking marginalized communities out of that in terms of representation in media is really, really insidious way of dehumanizing us. And also, just people don't notice it as well. They grow up with fairy tales, grow up with movies, and think, okay, this is what love is, and this is how love should be, and this is what I expect love to be like. And we are never part of the narrative. So part of it was, like, it wasn't as if I wanted to combat it, because when I write, I'm naturally going to write about Black people, but it was something that I just wanted to highlight in this collection. And also in doing this collection, I really learned so much about so many different cultures, including my own, and just discovered, like, Africa, for instance. I mean, I knew it before, but it really honed in how Africa is like its own entire universe. So many different cultures, so many different languages, and it's so beautiful. And it's something that we've just been barred from in the mainstream.
It's so interesting, isn't it? Because with fairy tales and with Disney films, obviously, you know, for a lot of millennials, those are the love stories that we grew up watching and reading. And I think, like you said, it's so important to be able to see yourself represented in those stories, because otherwise it's like, oh, well, I don't look like that. I don't have a body like that. And those are the kind of people that are worthy of love. Those are the people that, you know, fall in love and have these amazing stories, and I won't have that unless I look like that. It really it's quite subconscious, but I think it really shapes your understanding of romance as you grow up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does, especially as a Black woman, especially as a dark-skinned Black woman, because then within that you have colorism, and then you have light-skinned women seen as more desirable because of their proximity, their seeming proximity to whiteness. So yeah, all these things play a factor in how we see ourselves and how society sees us as well. And though we don't want to define ourselves in comparison to whiteness, it's important to just highlight our own stories and our own narratives and amplify them.
Can I ask what you make of some of the more recent Disney films that have incorporated princesses and princesses of color, and they're not just the white heroines that we kind of grew up seeing? Do you think that's kind of like do you find it tokenistic, or do you think it's worthy and that's exactly, you know, how it should be done?
I don't think it's tokenistic, because naturally they'll start making, I think it's good that they're doing that, but, you know, Princess and the Frog, she was Frog for like most of the movie. So I mean, it's okay, but I just feel like we need to just generally diversify how we see romance in the landscape.
I want to ask about one of your newer stories in the book that I really loved, called Oren. And it's all about really, really awful dates, which I'm sure is something that a lot of our listeners can resonate with. And I certainly, it certainly resonated with me. Can you tell me a bit about what drove you to write that story? Was it inspired by some of your own bad dates?
Yeah, Oren is like my favorite story. I shouldn't really even say what my favorite story is, but it is because it's me. Oren is like basically me, like, you know, obviously fictionalized a little bit, but yeah. And Deji is like the kind of guy that I'll go for or do go for. Yeah, and a bad date is absolutely based on one of my bad dates. I just really hope he doesn't listen to this podcast or read the story.
Can you explain what the story is about for this, for listeners here?
Yeah. So this girl is on a bad date at a spoken word live music event. It's like spectacularly awful date. And there is a guy also at this event and he's noticing her bad date and kind of taking pleasure. He's entertained by it, I should say. Meanwhile, it turns out that he is also on a date that's not exactly going well either. And two kind of throughout the story kind of take the piss out of each other for their terrible dates, and eventually they end up bonding over it and realizing that they click and organically. So it's just about how, you know, love isn't always linear, romance isn't always linear, you never know when you're going to meet somebody. And also I just like the fact that it's so organic, and I love that feeling of meeting someone and just that initial spark. And all of the stories have their own little illustrations underneath the title, and their illustration is just like sparks, because that's really what the story is about.
I think particularly now it's lovely to read stories about organic romance, like you said, because now in the world of dating apps, love is kind of like a commodity, and it's become almost sterilized, and it's really like systematic.
Exactly.
You know, you go on the app and you find someone. It's very clinical, and it totally strips away the spontaneity and the excitement of it. And I know you said recently in an interview that you don't use dating apps, is that right?
Yeah, I don't use them.
when did you make that decision? Have you ever used them, or just you never?
It wasn't even a decision. I tried them, and like legit I actually feel sick whenever I use them. I tried it once, I think I talked to a few guys, but it's just not me. And there was so much freedom, and I realized that, oh, it's just not compatible with who I am. And that's okay, because at first I thought like a weirdo. I felt like a weirdo because everybody's using them. But if just because it works for other people doesn't mean it works for you. And I think people just need to realize that everybody has their own kind of preferences and how they like to meet someone. And of course it will be I'm sure it'd be way easier. Well, actually I'm not sure, but it might be way easier if I used apps. But it just doesn't, I just don't like it. I just feel like it's so weird for me having to like almost perform. And also you're both like there with, there's this pressure of like, okay, we're both here to meet somebody, and we just both like are hoping that we click, rather than just meeting someone and like see if you click or like you don't. It's just, it's a different thing. And also I'm a black woman, and apps are hell for us, such a minefield. There's a study saying that black women and Asian, East Asian men are like the least desired on these apps. And yeah, and then even if you are desired, you have to navigate like maybe fetishization and things like that. So it's, yeah, it's a lot. I just can't be bothered with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame you. I can't be bothered with it either. It's, for me, it's also just like you said, it's that kind of pressure to perform, and also just the way that it totally strips the dating experience of like any ambiguity. And that's the part of the fun, isn't it? Like when you meet someone and you like them, you're trying to figure out if they like you too, and that's what makes it exciting. Whereas if you're both on a dating app date, it's like, okay, so we know that we both are attracted to each other, or we like something that the other person said in their profile, and now like let's do this and see if it works. It's like a social experiment. It doesn't feel natural at all. But you know, like you said, it does obviously work for some people. I mean, I have lots of friends that are in really good relationships and they met off dating apps. But
yeah, I know someone who married someone off of a dating app, but she was literally, she wanted to get married. She had like literally like, you know, when someone just approaches something with a plan. And so it's fine for that, because she was like, okay, this is exactly what I want to do. But for me, it's just, yeah, it's not compatible with who I am.
You said in an interview recently that you think love and romance are kind of seen as like innately feminine concepts. Do you mean that in terms of popular culture or more generally?
Pop culture, but also generally, but pop culture is kind of generally anyway. Like, I think a lot of men don't want to be seen as loving romance or liking romance or what seeking, actively seeking romance, because it's seen as soft and soft is seen as weak. And also, romance isn't just soft. It can be really steely and really hard and really kind of, it's a really kind of galvanizing, strong thing, but it cannot be soft at the same time. And I think people just can't coalesce the two in their mind and think that softness just naturally equates to weakness.
Yeah, it's interesting that, isn't it? Because when I read that quote from you, I was quite struck by it because I never really thought about it like that, but you're right. And it's almost whenever a man expresses something, you know, a positive view about rom-coms, for example, it's almost like seen as an effeminate comment, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's so weird because romance is such a universal thing. Like, women aren't just doing it on their own. Like, everybody is attracted to everybody. Like, it's not something that is exclusive to us, you know? And we're not doing it on when it's not something that we're just going through by ourselves. So it's a really strange phenomenon, I think.
Can I ask how you think the myths perpetuated about romance by fairy tales and Disney films kind of shaped the way that you behave in relationships or previously behaved in relationships?
It's going to sound really arrogant, but it really didn't. Because there's a story based on my parents in the book, and their relationship was one of based on friendship and equality. And so yes, it was nice to see, you know, the princess being swept by the prince. It didn't move me in any which way. I was like, okay, that's nice, but it wasn't really something that I sought after in relationships. What the thing that I sought after in relationships was friendship, ultimately. That was it. Obviously, it's nice. I think that if you're in a relationship, it's lovely to be cherished, and you should be cherished, and you should be doted on. But the thing that's most important for me is that connection and that spark. Which is like why Oren was such a fun story for me, because they have that.
Yeah, because I think for longevity, you know, the most important thing with your partner is that you are genuinely best mates, isn't it?
Exactly. And that's so fun. Like, I can't think of anything hotter than just like laughing with someone and laughing at the same thing and clicking over the same thing and just really enjoying each other's company and also being attracted to them. It's just great.
Yeah, it's hard to find all of those different aspects kind of need to be interwoven together, because, you know, like you said, it's easy to get on with someone as a friend, but then you both have to have that mutual like sexual attraction as well.
Exactly.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You tweet quite a lot about relationships, and I wanted to pick you up on a few things that you said recently. So I think last week you wrote, being attracted to men is so embarrassing. The bar is so low. We're like, and when I talk, he listens. That really resonated with me, because I think that is so true. And we are straight women are so quick to praise men when they show them the slightest sign of, I don't know, interest in what they have to say, or, you know, they hold the door open for them, or like anything tiny, because you, like you said, the bar is literally so low. And I don't think it's just about the way you act, you know, in the initial stages of a relationship. I think even sexually, the bar is so low, you know?
Yeah.
As soon as a guy does something generous, you're like, oh my God,
oh my gosh,
safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me a bit about that and what inspired that tweet.
Not really inspired, because just inspired by the conversations that I have with my friends, and also what I like about my guy. Like, it's just the fact that it is the fact that he listens, and also it just says the state of straight men in general. They don't listen, they really don't. So when a guy actually behaves like a normal person that's interested in you and looks you in the eye and is engaged with your interests and asks you questions and values the words that come out of your mouth, it seems like an incredible phenomenon, even though it really shouldn't be, because how many women in our lives do we know who do that, you know? But yeah, it was just inspired generally by like conversations that I have with my friends, because as soon as when they like a guy, that's one of the first things that they say.
Why do you think the bar is so low for straight men? Why is that?
Because of their state of being. Because it's really hard to find somebody that listens genuinely. So when you find someone, it seems like it's fine. Someone who does, it seems like it's just this incredible, special thing, when really it's the least that we deserve, the very, very least that we deserve. But I think it's just that men, maybe we need to hold them to higher standards. I don't know. Maybe they'll rise up. But part of me feels like we've been trying to do that for years and it hasn't happened yet. So
another thing you said recently that I wanted to ask you about was that you said the dating scene for Black women in London is atrocious. Did you mean pre-lockdown, in lockdown, or just generally? And if so,
generally, why do you think that is?
Like,
well, because of desirability politics and white supremacy. So Black women are seen as the bottom of the pile, basically. It goes from history when we were seen as white women were at the pinnacle of femininity, and Black women were meant to be the antithesis of this. We're meant to be hyper masculine, grotesque, beastly. And so those things are perpetuated in so many small ways. It's why when we watch TV, there's a dark-skinned Black woman, she's painted as aggressive. We never see a Black woman, especially on British TV, being cherished and loved and enjoying this soft romance. And if we do, I can almost guarantee it will not be a dark-skinned Black woman. And I think the last show I remember on British TV showing a dark-skinned Black woman in love was Noughts and Crosses. And Noughts and Crosses is literally about race and is about racism. And so that was a very conscious decision. That was the point. But we just don't see that. And so that kind of thing perpetuates itself in society, colorism and racism. And so you're battling it from all sides. But yeah, it's really difficult.
Yeah, I think you made a really interesting point there about Noughts and Crosses being one of the only shows to feature a dark-skinned Black woman. And it, like you said, it's a show about race. Like that, obviously, you know, it's brilliant to have that representation. But at the same time, wouldn't it be so much better to have a dark-skinned Black woman in a show that has absolutely nothing to do with race?
And it's exactly, just a Black woman being in love. And I love Noughts and Crosses. I grew up on it. So it's like, it's more of the thing that I want Noughts and Crosses to exist alongside other representations of Black women being in love. And race is part of our existence. It's not the fact that I want to de-racialize our experience at all, because I think that I hate seeing that on television. I think it's just false and paints a false narrative. It's the fact that, yes, we are Black, but race doesn't form our entire existence. We live life regularly and we enjoy romance regularly. And yes, race is part of our experience, but isn't the totality of it.
Can I ask if there are any shows or films you've seen recently where you have felt that the portrayal of romance on screen has been accurate and spoken to your own experiences?
I mean, the thing is, the only show I can think of is Insecure, and that's American, which is just a show about, you know, Black women and their friendships and their dating life, and it's just regular and it's just normal, and it's like, yeah, that's it. Otherwise, no. That's why I'm writing my own.
It's mad. We're in 2020, and it's, I think people have this real, people who maybe don't don't know that much what they're talking about, but it's very easy to kind of look at the state of the world now and think, we're so progressive. We're so in that state now where, you know, everyone's equal and it's all fine. And it's like, it couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, we've seen that,
exactly. You
know, we've seen that this year, how much that isn't the truth. But it's really, I think that's why it's so important books like yours come out. And I mean, it's there are such brilliant stories. Can I ask, other than Oren, what are some of your other favorite stories in the book?
I love Allegro Medi, obviously, because that's about my parents. I love Ushering just because that's the very first story I wrote. And I was like, oh, that was the first story that I was like, oh, I can do this. And it's also based on Yoruba mythology, and I'm Yoruba. What else? I love Cher because she's such a fun protagonist for me, because she's so not what you'd see as a soft protagonist, but ultimately she really is, and she gets pulled into love. And I really love Naleli because that's such a, like, it reminds me of a high school movie, and that's one of the genres that I pulled on for that story. And I just really loved that it was set in Lesotho, and we never really see black high school movies like that ever, that are kind of like nice and fluffy. So I really loved that story as well.
Yeah, so true. All of the kind of classic 90s high school films, like She's All That and American Pie and stuff. Yeah, it's I really liked Ocean, actually. You mentioned, there's a quote that I really enjoyed where you write, Ocean was used to being looked at, but from this moment she was used to being seen. What does that quote mean to you? Is that about, is there an element of, because to me, I read that quote and I thought, are you talking about fetishization a bit in that, being looked at?
A bit, yeah. A tiny bit. Well, yes, because like black women are hyper-visible and invisible at the same time. So you're hyper-visible, which means that you have all these images projected onto you. These things projected onto your identity that have nothing to do with you. And so you're not really seen. So the hypervisibility actually obscures who you really are. And it's so powerful. So just to be free within yourself and to be seen for yourself. So yeah, speaking to kind of all black women, that line.
And also it reminds me of, I'm sure you've seen this film, Set It Up on Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a line in the film, so it's about these two assistants working with these very powerful bosses, and you know, the bosses kind of run them ragged, so their plan to like get them off their backs is to set them up with one another. And one of their tactics, they tell the guy to say to the woman, I see you. and none of them really understand what that means, but it gets her hook, line and sinker, the fact that she's told that she is seen. So what do you think this idea of being seen is so appealing?
Because I feel like a lot of men date girls they don't really see the women that they're dating a lot of the time. They're like, okay, she's pretty. I've dated guys who are like, oh, you know, you're good looking and you're smart and you're funny, but they're not really engaging with those things. They like the fact that I am those things. They recognize it, but they don't really see it or engage with it. It's almost like I think people think a reduced like trophy wife to like looks or something, but it's actually not that. Sometimes men will actually seek out smart women because they know it makes them look good to have a smart woman. They're not actually like engaging with it or actually like, wow, she's actually smart and enjoying that fact. So to me, being seen is like somebody being actually like valuing you for who you are, rather than just like seeing it as points for them. Oh yeah, I'm with this amazing person. It's really possible for men to reduce your qualities into something that puts them in a good light.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably exacerbated by dating app culture, isn't it? Because by social media, because everyone is kind of on a dating app profile and on an Instagram profile, everyone is reduced to like a series of images or a series of metrics and, you know, like your height and where you're from and what you do for a living and all that kind of stuff. And while those are things that, yes, of course, we judge a partner on those things before we end up hooking up with them, but it's so much deeper than that. Attraction is so much deeper than that. It should be about like physical spark in person.
Exactly.
You know, it's you know, one person could be your perfect type on paper, as they say in Love Island, but then, you have no spark. So
exactly, that's why I got fatigued with it, because I was just like writing my bio and I was just like, but this is not me. Like, it's me, but it's not me. And I just like, yeah, it was just not enough for me.
Yeah, no, me too. I mean, I find it really difficult to present yourself that way. And also, you know, there's the other thing where, and we've spoken about this on the podcast quite a lot, but dating apps just require you to have such a solid understanding of the kind of person you're looking for. And I don't know if you can ever really pick someone who's going to be right for you just based on a profile, because like you said, you know, you need to see how you get on in person.
Exactly.
It's exactly, it's that difficult. Okay, so it's time for our lessons in love section of the show. So this is the part of the show where I ask every guest to share something that they have learned from their previous relationship experiences. So would you like to share your lesson in love?
Yeah, nothing is linear. I think as a romance writer, I think that I can write somebody's lines for them, predict them, and when they don't react in the way that I expect them to react, and how they reacted may not necessarily be innately bad, it may be just true to them, just doesn't conform to what I expected. I used to think that that's a negative thing, and so it would affect how I saw them, which was so unfair. Because you really can't control another person's actions. And sometimes someone is not in the right, exactly the same space as you are, and they may take a longer time to get to where you are. So I think it's just expecting the journey to romance and the journey of romance to not be as easy as 2 + 2 = 4, and allowing the freedom for that and the space for that, and also not being tied up when it isn't so straightforward, and being upset and allowing yourself to be anxious when it isn't as easy as that, because I really do truly think that if somebody's meant to be in your life, they will be. So I think you need to just relax and not try to force things to happen if they're not happening in the way that you want them to be.
Yeah, I actually think that's such an important thing, and it's actually really comforting to say that to yourself when something isn't going right, or if you're going through a breakup or whatever, just to say everything is happening as it's supposed to happen. You know, everything happens for a reason. If two people are meant to be together, they will find their way back to one another. It's just, it's how it works. How did you come to that realization? When did you kind of have that epiphany?
It was really recently. I was trying to write somebody's lines for them, basically. And I was, in doing that, I was taking away their personhood, and that person was a really, really great, is a really, really great person. And they were just working through things, but because they weren't ready exactly the same time that I was ready, I was almost demonizing them for it, which was wrong of me. But in realizing that I was doing that, I was able to keep them in my life and also allow them the space. And now we're in a much better place than we were, because I was like, oh, I'm doing that thing where I'm trying to write my own romance, when the reality is actually so much better and so much more interesting. And they're such an incredible person, and I'm trying to push them into a box where they didn't fit in, which was so unfair of me. And also it was unfair on them, and it was also unfair on me, because it was like I was just suffering for no reason.
Yeah. So this was a former partner who you've now become friends with?
It's complicated.
It always is. It always is complicated. Like you said, nothing is linear. That's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. If you're a new listener to this show, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or anywhere else. You can comment and leave us a rating too, so that more people can find us. Keep up with everything to do with the show on Instagram. Just search Millennial Love. See you soon.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.